So we're learning Rav Dessler, the Hebrew volume of Michta Miliyahu, page 123. And we're doing a topic that's called Ikuvim Leklalim Letshuva, obstacles, general obstacles to tshuva. So what we spoke about up to now was a number of obstacles. The first one we mentioned was Rotzen, a person's own desire, his own personal interest. So that a person's interest can prevent him from seeing the truth. Right? If you have an interest in a certain area and a certain bias in a certain area, so then you cannot see the truth, even though it's right in front of you. You become blind to the truth. And it becomes an obligation for a person to search out the truth and to be aware of that he has these blind spots because of personal interests, personal desires. That was obstacle number one. There is a way around it. A person has to search out. He has to look. He has to want to do tshuva. If that he makes that his desire is to come close to Hashem. His desire is to draw close to Hashem. So then that desire will at least have equal weight to his other desires, and therefore that will allow him to see the truth of what he's doing correctly or incorrectly. The second obstacle we mentioned was that the basic physicality of a person is a basic sensuality to a person that every person is born with, and it's almost in the genes. In other words, it's also not only from himself, not from his own sins of his youth, but also habits and ways he's inherited from his parents. All of you, right? His parents, his whole family background. So he comes in with a whole package of desires, physicality, physical desires, sensual desires. In other words, a person comes in with a package of his physicality, his sensuality, and that is a certain type, that pulls him down. It's a certain type of attachment to this physical world and the desires and the lusts and the pleasures of this physical world, which also can hold him back from striving for spiritual achievements, spiritual heights. That's obstacle number two. Obstacle number three is that when a person has sinned a certain sin a number of times, so then it becomes like it's permitted. Once he gets into the haze, he does it a few times, so he starts thinking of it as being permitted, and he gets to such a degree that he doesn't even make excuses anymore. He doesn't bother to make excuses or to try and justify. You know, you do the wrong thing, so you try to justify yourself. You try to excuse it. You know, it's, I had this reason, I had that reason, I wasn't feeling well, and I wasn't in the best mood, etc. And therefore, but it can get to such a point that if a person does it enough times, he doesn't even make excuses anymore. I did it because I wanted to do it. So that becomes another obstacle for doing tshuva. That becomes like a wall that blocks him from repairing, because it becomes almost impossible for him to repair that which is so broken. Obstacle number four we mentioned is person's lust. The lust for person has lusts, so he becomes a slave to his lusts. And he's used to his lusts. You know, he becomes so accustomed to certain, let's say, spoiling him, treating himself or indulging himself. He becomes used to. You know, in other words, if he doesn't, it's more than just habits. It's like if he doesn't have this type of breakfast, so then he can't function the rest of the day, right? If you don't give him exactly what he's used to, you know, he becomes a slave to his desires, and therefore he must fulfill his desires. His desires become the be-all and end-all, and it becomes an ideal almost. Right? I have to eat such a breakfast, I have to wear such clothes, I have to have exactly this type of clothing, less is no good, and I have to live exactly in this type of a house, and I have to travel to this type of transport. And it becomes like a religion that he has to fulfill his own needs. And people make it. They make their house their God. They make their keeping up with the Joneses or the Cohens their God, right? Mm-hmm. And it becomes an ideal. He has to have this type of house, and he has to have this type of car, and he has to have this type of furnishing, and he has to keep changing it every year or every 2 years, and he has to have this type of holiday. And it becomes an ideal. It's like a religion that he has to have this type of lifestyle, and he can't do with less than what he's accustomed to. And that can be a tremendous obstacle, that he's not willing to give way to practicality. In other words, all of these things which stop him from leading a spiritual life, because he's so sold on this ideal life that he set up for himself. If we have a wealthy person So then our obligation, let's say he's used to, the Gemara says a story of a man who was used to eating on golden plates. That was it. He only ate on golden plates. So he became very poor. He lost all of his wealth. So this community was taking care of him, but they weren't giving him his food on golden plates. They were giving it to him on regular plates. And his problem was he was vomiting up whatever he ate. And he couldn't keep down his food. So they finally brought in a doctor. And the doctor says he's not keeping down his food because he's so upset that he has to have a golden plate. You have to give me his food on a golden plate. Okay, that's the story. But number one, that person has a problem. You know, he has become accustomed to such a thing. It's become like a psychological need. In terms of our obligation as a community is to provide him his needs. If he needs a golden plate, it's called a need. It's a need no less than bread and butter. It's a need. He needs to have such a plate. So if he needs it, then we as a community have to supply it. But it's for him to work on himself, and it's for us to work on ourselves not to have such ridiculous needs. Right? That we, right? The community has an obligation. It's a different obligation to a person's own obligation for himself, that he shouldn't become hooked on all sorts of craziness. A person who becomes, right, a person, let's say, you know, he has to change his underwear twice a day, right? Whatever it is. So it's a craziness, but it's an expense. And it becomes an absolute, it becomes like an obsession. So all of this costs time, it costs resources, it costs money, right? And he's not free anymore to serve Hashem as he should be. So this is an obstacle when a person makes his desires his ideal. This was the expression that the Chovis Levavos calls that their stomachs are their gods. Mitneihem Eloheihem. Their stomachs are their appetites become their gods. Okay, that was number four. And number five, which we said was the harshest of them, the greatest obstacle of all, we said is haughtiness. The greatest obstacle of all is haughtiness. A person is haughty, and therefore he's not willing. It becomes his own barrier. His haughtiness becomes his own barrier for him to submit himself in order to lower his head and to admit that he's wrong because of his haughtiness. So what we mentioned, the ideas about haughtiness we mentioned were that the sages say that Hashem says of the haughty person, I and he cannot exist in the same world. Right? And he's considered as if he pushes away the divine presence. And the reason is because he doesn't want the divine presence. In other words, Hashem is willing to enter any place. Hashem is willing to always enter our lives. But if we reject Hashem, so then he can't enter. Right? We're not letting him in, so then he can't get in. So that's the haughty person. No, it's not that Hashem is not unwilling to align himself with the haughty person. It's that the haughty person himself rejects Hashem. So we ask the question on this, we see that there are haughty people who are very God-fearing and who seemingly serve Hashem. So we said that the service of such people is external. Because it's external. It's their own sort of patriotism. You know, they're loyal to their father's ways, and it's part of their image that they are from Jews and they are scholars and they are rabbis even. But it's really self-serving. He's self-serving his own ego that he's put himself on a pedestal, and therefore he's just feeding that. And his mitzvahs are not real mitzvahs. He's not really doing it for Hashem at all. He's doing it for himself. This is going to be a tremendous tragedy that the haughty person thinks he's perfect. He thinks he's wonderful. There's no one like him. But really, even his mitzvahs he's not doing for Hashem, because he's built up this whole delusion of who he is, being superior to everyone else, and he doesn't even do mitzvahs, because he does good deeds, but for himself, not for Hashem. So that's a tremendous, tremendous danger. Now, continuing on this idea of the problem of haughtiness, and the reason we need to speak about it, because we all have grains of this as a problem. And as maybe we're not the extreme, none of us are the extreme example of haughtiness, of arrogance, that we have elements of arrogance, and all of these are little blocks, right? Like just like a person has blocks in his veins, right? The blood can't flow smoothly because they're little blocks, they're little obstacles. These are little obstacles. We all have a degree of haughtiness. We have to somehow be conscious of it and try and trim it where possible. Now, says Rav Dessler as follows. This is on page 124. Usakana gadole misgoy. There's a great danger to an arrogant person, a haughty person, afilu bo'ilam hazeh, even in this world, ki einenu nidoyin b'midas harachamim, because he will not be judged with the aspect of compassion. He will not be treated with compassion. When he's judged, he's going to be judged strictly, the strict letter of the law, and not within the letter of the law, not in a compassionate way. Rather, with the full measure of strict law. As if you didn't do it perfectly, you get penalized, you get punished. And therefore, it comes out, even if someone is a superior person, he really is an outstanding individual, right? He's very intelligent, and he's very capable, and he's very talented, and he's very quick to do things, and he's got a quick mind, etc. Even someone who is a superior person, and because of that, he sets himself apart. He says, I'm superior to others. Therefore, he puts himself on a pedestal. He separates himself from others. So then they say, well, since you're apart, so we judge you alone. We judge you by yourself. You're not joined as part of the community. And really, for a person to merit compassion, that the heavens should treat him compassionately, he needs to be part of the community. Because Hashem has already promised the Jewish people as a whole, as a group, that he's going to take care of them, that he's going to make sure that they get through all the problems, all the troubles, he's going to push us through. And rachamim, the attribute of rachamim, of compassion, mercy, falls on the community. That's why we're always so careful when we daven with a minyan, right? Men who daven with them, we daven with with 10 other Jews. We're always careful to join in part of the community. One of the warnings we have, don't separate yourself from the community, because the community has a special pass. There's a promise that Hashem will not forsake the Jewish people till the end of time. We are guaranteed survival to the end of time. But individuals can get lost. What's the problem? You know, as an individual, he's doing his own thing. He doesn't measure up to Hashem's standards. So let's lop him off. But the Jewish people has been around a long time, but we're not so great in number. And the reason is because Hashem keeps pruning the trees, those who wander off, and they're doing their own thing. So they get lost, and they're cut off. Maybe some of them come back, maybe they don't. But each person has to be part of the community, and therefore, that's how he merits rachamim. Ki rachamim heini maklam, because compassion, that it works with the community. V'zeh loshon ha-Zoya. This is what the Zohar says on this topic. There's the story where Elisha the prophet said to, I think it was the Hashunamis, right, that he says to him, I think she'd taken him into his house, and she gave him a room, and she gave him a bed, and a table, and a lamp, and she was mamish giving him very good hospitality. So he said, what can I do for you? I want to repay the favor. What can I do for you? Hayesh ledov el ha-melech ol sar tzvo. Right? Can I speak on your behalf to the king or to one of the great ministers, one of the great officers? Elisha shirotze lakia toive leshunamis. It's referring to Elisha who wants to somehow show gratitude to the Shunamis. And these are the verses that we have in the book of Kings. So he says to her, what favors can I show? Maybe I can speak on your behalf to the king. So the Zohar says, when it's talking about he's going to speak to the king, he means Hashem. Maybe I can speak on your behalf to the king, meaning Hashem. Right? Yumada, on this day, so says the Zohar, this refers to Rosh Hashanah. On this day, maybe I could speak on your behalf. On this day, meaning Rosh Hashanah, the day of judgment, the Kol Bnei Alma Kaimim Bedina, where all people of the world stand to be judged. Maybe I can be an advocate on your behalf on this day. Omelo, he said to her, I'at starich lach legabe malka de alma, al uvdin di beyodoch. Maybe I can speak to the master of the universe about your deeds, about what's going on in your life. Maybe I can put in a good word for you. V'toyma, and she said, V'toych ami anoich yoshevus. I sit amongst my people. In other words, please don't do me any favors. I will be judged together with the Jewish people. I sit amongst my people. B'shaita d'dina. Right, because at the time of judgment, in the Dishna Moedim Rishim Belechudeu, so this is what she said to him. At the time of judgment, that those who become noticeable and who separate, right, that they judged separately, Even though they are meritorious, it's fasid bekadmisa. They are judged by themselves. They're judged first. They come before the king first. And because of this, that a person should be judged separately, no person should ever want to separate from his people. This is what the Zohar says. Because at all times, Hashem has compassion for the group as a whole. And for this reason, she said, I sit amongst my people. No, please don't be my advocate. I'm together with my people. That's what she told Elisha. Says Rav Desla, Noi Rav Ayim, this is awesome, unbelievable. Lechovtze shispalel avura Elisha Hanovi. She didn't want Elisha Novi should daven for her. Elisha Novi, one of the greatest Jews who ever lived, he shouldn't daven for her. Latzila midin Rosh Hashanah, to save her from the judgment of Rosh Hashanah. Mishum she'al yedei tfilas Hanovi haloi tiyeh betzuyenas. Because through the prayer of the prophet, she will already stand out. It will make her separate, because she'll stand out. She'll already be... She's been sorted out, selected out from the group. And she won't receive the merit of being a part of the community. And that's what she didn't want, and that was what she said to him. And that the Zohar says there's a lesson from that, because she was right. Even though she would have Elisha as her advocate, she's better off. And even though she was an outstanding woman, she was a great tzaddikus. She's a very righteous woman, but still to be judged by yourself and to be looked at, to be scrutinized individually. So who doesn't have faults? We all have faults. So therefore everything goes underneath the magnifying glass. So then who says she can stand? But if she's part of the group of Israel, so we pass through as a people. Right? Being part of the group itself saves us. Says Rav Desla, Im kein kal v'chomer ben benoi shel kal v'chomer misha mi'atzmoi. Therefore, if that's the case, that this woman who was, Elisha tried to ask her, can I maybe daven on your behalf? If in this case it was not advisable, how much the more so? Someone who by himself, of his own initiative, Miblishi spalel avura novi godel telisha, without having some great prophet like Elisha davening for him, Achmipne gavus libo elevat, only because of his own arrogance, only because of his own haughtiness, his own feeling of superiority, Mispiritu believer in his heart. It's enough. It's enough that in your heart he already makes himself separate. He already says, I'm special, I'm different. In his own thoughts, right? He says, I'm separate. And he considered himself to be greater and superior and outstanding, more outstanding than others. So therefore he's distancing himself from falling under the category of Hashem's compassion. He already loses this protection, this umbrella of Hashem's compassion by withdrawing himself from the community, because he's superior, he's more, he's a bigger. Therefore, he is already attaches himself to the strict law of justice. Behine, who in a sense, every single person is like a judge in the heavenly courts. Each one of us is like a judge in the heavenly courts. In terms of himself and his merits. Now, so to speak, when you come to the heavenly court, they give you a form to fill out, and they say, you know, which court do you want to be judged in? Who are you and where are you, right? And you basically select the courtroom that they're going to judge you with.
Wow.
And we're not talking about after 120 years. We're not talking after a person dies. Ela b'chay of mamash, in his lifetime, in your own lifetime, you set. You said in the request for how they should judge you. Right, and this applies to each person in his heart, in his thoughts, and in his actions. He speaks to himself, and he already decides what sort of person I am. Who am I? Right. He makes his own category. He categorizes himself. Right. The marshal, for instance, Mala Gaiva Madaber, right? For instance, an arrogant person thinks to himself, Shagodl en roi loy lischaber lakotten. Someone who's superior should not attach himself to someone's inferior. I should not be together with those people. They're inferior. I'm superior. So therefore, I should be apart from them. It's not correct that I should stand with them. They're all inferior and I'm superior. and therefore I'm apart. So who's decided that he's apart? He decided it. He decided he's separate from everyone else. Right? At least Naig but Pirud Mimeno, he should be treated. He wants special treatment. He wants a special audience with Hashem. He's not going in with a group. He wants a special audience with Hashem. He's going to let Hashem know, you know, what he needs and make
all,
a deal.
It's an category of
Gaiva. It's all Gaiva. It's all Gaiva. Shitazun Nasi's psak halacha v'beis nishamada. So therefore, his own approach becomes the ruling that they use in the heavenly courts. Eklis naiga ma'ishazeh. So they say, now how should we treat it? He wants to be treated. He wants to be separate, so we'll treat him separately. Which is to say, that the attribute that a person uses to measure with, in other words, the way we measure, the way we look at life, and the way we measure what goes on in our life, right? Hagvul v'amidah v'erech. You know, those boundaries and those approaches, that attitude, and that those values, we have our values. This is worth more than that. This is important. This is not important. We give values to different things, right? This mitzvah is important. This mitzvah is not so important. We ourselves attach values, right, to different things. So the attributes that we set for ourselves, right, the midah she'adam moideh, the measure that with which a person measures, shemachriya atzmoi, adam atzmoi lekama inyan, which a person sets for himself, moideh dim lo, they use those measures to measure him by. Right, they used to hear the same measures. He says, right, this is how I should be treated. So that's how they treat him. Right? This is what he gives importance to. So that's what they give importance to. They judge him based on the way he wants to be judged. They judge him and they rule on him according to the value that he sets for himself. Once he rules for himself that it's fitting that he should be separate from people who are less than himself, that's how they rule him and that's how they act with him. So that's obstacle number five. And this is the person who is arrogant, who considers himself separate, superior. So therefore that's a danger that he sets on himself, as we said, even in this world, because a person is judged every year, Rosh Hashanah and Rosh Hashanah, and they decide what sort of year you're going to have. How much health will you have, and how many resources will you have? Will you have money? Will you have strength? Will you have people helping you? Who will be your friends and neighbors? Who will be your family? All of this is judged on Rosh Hashanah. And this person, with his not haughtiness, puts himself in a separate character, and he's treated in a very strict way, because he's not part of the community. So he doesn't have the special protection of being part of the community of Israel. And who's done it? Who's put him aside? He put himself aside. He's put himself aside with his obstinacy, with his arrogance, his stubbornness. How awesome are, how terrible are these obstacles. All of these obstacles prevent us from flowing naturally, from attaching ourselves to our spiritual destiny, to higher worlds, to our eternity. One person gets stuck in this world, like something that's like an anchor that's stuck to the ground. The ship can't move because it's anchored to the ground, and it's stuck in this world, stuck with the obsessions of this world and the pleasures of this world and the mishugos and the craziness of this world, and he's stuck here. He can't move on. He's not prepared to draw Hashem into his life, into his world, into his heart, into his conscience. And therefore, how long becomes the tunnel that such a person has to tunnel through his heart? You have to somehow create a tunnel, right? Because he's made a jail for himself. All of these obstacles are like the walls of a prison, and each one blocks him from accessing Hashem. So how is he going to get out? How do you get out of a prison? You have to tunnel out. Right? You have to tunnel out. Just by the way, Mechila, the word Mechila, Limchul, is linked to the Hebrew word Mechila, is a tunnel. Mechila is a tunnel. You have to tunnel out. You have to somehow access Hashem. And you've got all this junk, all this gunk that's blocking you from seeing Hashem, from talking to Hashem, attaching yourself to Hashem, to these mitzvahs, to the Torah, to his world, the world to come. So you have to tunnel. It's a very long tunnel. And the dirt is very thick and very muddy. It's very, very hard to drive. There's just so much junk that he has to tunnel through. It becomes very, very difficult for such a person to save himself. This way, where's this tunnel? The tunnel's into our own hearts. Where are we tunneling to? It's in our own hearts. Our attachment to Hashem is in our hearts. But there's all the junk around our hearts, all the layers of fat around this heart that's preventing us. We're not in access with our hearts. We're just in access to our stomachs. And our stomachs are ruling our minds. Our stomach is in charge of our mind. It gives instruction to the mind, right? Go find me the best pizza, the best milkshake, and right, the best couch and the best air conditioner. And, you know, let's have the good life, right? So therefore, the stomach rules the mind instead of... The stomach wants all the pleasures of this world. So that's the physical...
It's interesting what they call the stomach.
Right, the physical side of our, right, the nefesh ha-bahami, the animal soul.
Oh, our stomach is the most physical part of us.
The animal soul, what they call it, Kabbalists speak of that, an animal soul rules the mind. So the mind runs to do the bidding of the animal soul. So the technology comes up with more luxuries and more innovations, more comfortable armchair, a more comfortable bed. You know, it's such a comfortable bed, you can spend the whole day there, you don't even get bed sores. It's such a beautiful bed. You could, right? So therefore, you become totally immersed in this. In this, right? Let me just read this again. So how awesome are these obstacles? And how long is the tunnel that a person will have to tunnel through the contamination of his heart? Out of the dirt that's covering up his heart. Until he can come to do tshuva within his heart. It has to be heartfelt. There has to be a real desire to want to come close to Hashem. This is the true tshuva. Tshuva means return. We're returning to Hashem, to the closeness of Hashem. But it has to be heartfelt. It has to be sincere. It has to be genuine. It's on this that we daven and we request, Hashem, please let us return in a complete way. Tshuva shleima, let us return in a complete way, not just in a symbolic way. Let us truly return before you. Now the next topic Rav Desla brings here, which is linked to what we've been saying up to now, is Koach HaRasha Belev. A force of evil within the heart. There's a force of evil within the heart. And we'll see how he explains it. Right? In other words, the heart, so to speak, is described as having two chambers, the left and the right. So the right is the altruistic side of the person, spiritual side of the person that desires spirituality, desires goodness, it desires to do the right thing, to be a good person. And then it's the left side of the heart that desires the material, physical pleasures of this world. So this also has a force. It's a type of influence, right? The heart, as we said before, tries to influence the brain, and then to command the brain to follow its desires. Right? The brain takes instructions from whoever gives him instructions. The question is, which desire is ruling over the brain? Says Rav Desla like this: Ikar v'tichin kol mitzvos hay mitzvah shebelev. The essence and the depth of all of the mitzvahs, the true depth of the mitzvahs is the mitzvahs of the heart. The real mitzvahs are the mitzvahs of the heart. And as it's the mitzvahs we perform in our thoughts, and in terms of our minds, in terms of our intentions. Gam ikar mitzvahs habaisis, even the physical mitzvahs, even those physical actions which are mitzvahs, right? So therefore, even the essence of even the physical mitzvahs is a kavana shabah nasos, is the intention with which you do them. A person can do a physical act, but the intention makes a big difference. You go to help your neighbor, you go to do an act of chesed, but what's your real intention? Right? You're doing her a favor because she'll do you a favor in the future, or you're doing a favor because you want to do the will of Hashem. Right? What's the real intention? We do good deeds, but what's the real intention behind our good deeds? So this is really gives weight to our mitzvahs. U'mashevat mafchin Rabbeinu Chaya b'chaya ben chuvus levov is the chuvus eivorim. Now the fact that Rabbeinu b'chaya, he wrote a famous book called Chuvus alevovus, the duties of the heart, which is to say that we have duties that relate to our hearts, the duties we fulfill with our hearts, and then there's duties we fulfill with our limbs. Chuvus alevovus, the duties of your heart, as the thoughts you're obligated to think, and the feelings you're obligated to feel, and there's chuvus eivorim, the duties of our limbs, right? Things we have to physically do. To go here, do this, do that, right? Do this act, do the following act. So there he separates, because you see, when we learn Shulchan Aruch, when we learn the Halachas Svarim, so it tells us the physical duties, Right? It tells us what you're allowed to do, what you're allowed to eat, where you're allowed to go, etc., and what you're not allowed to eat, what you're not allowed to do, right? What's Shabbos, what's not Shabbos. So those are the physical actions we have to do. Those are called chovei seivorim, the duties of the law. And those are the physical duties that we have to fulfill as from Jews. So he wrote a book called Duties of the Heart. So seemingly, they're two separate sections. That's what it looks like, right? There's two separate divisions in the company, two separate departments. That's what it looks like. But it says of this, that's not really true. There really is there's a huge overlap. Let's see in a minute. That Rav Leinu Chayav makes it into two separate divisions. Whom if neshiyesh mitzvah shebelev she'enem mugdaris b'maisim ktsuvim. That is because there are duties of the heart, there are mitzvahs of our heart, which do not have any physical deeds attached to them. For instance, let's say to love Hashem. So to love Hashem is to think about Hashem in a certain way, which arouses a feeling of love. So there's no actual physical act attached to loving Hashem. It could be everything you do. Right? You prepare for Shabbos, or you daven, or you do some other mitzvah, or you honor your parents, whatever it is. It could be any physical act contains in it love to Hashem. But there's no specific action which is, this is how you love Hashem, right? You stretch your hand, and then you jump up in three times, and you do this, and that's loving Hashem. There's no specific action attached to loving Hashem. So those are called duties of the heart, which are purely duties of the heart. There are a number of ways of translating the love of Hashem into actions. Right? So that you'll do a mitzvah, you'll do the mitzvah with a feeling of love, with a feeling of attachment to Hashem. Aval etzem kol mitzvah hu ma sheyesh mihem halev be'odom. However, the mitzvahs themselves are, all of the mitzvahs, however, all of them have that which is going on in your mind, which is, in other words, as follows. But in terms of the physical acts, those physical mitzvahs, which are just purely physical mitzvahs, what does affect the physical mitzvahs is the intention behind them. In other words, it could be you can have the duty of the heart, which is just by itself, but the duties of the limbs, all of the duties of the limbs have some intention attached to them. There's always heart in whatever you do. You do it something in a heartfelt way, or you do it in a heartless way. Mm-hmm. Right? You do it without thinking, or you do it with thinking, you do it in an automatic way, then it's without intention. Right? But intention always plays a role in the physical actions that we do. And all of the duties of art actually do come out in some sort of action. There is some sort of activity that translates into an action. Now, just like the main mitzvah is our intention, is the heart. Really, it's our thoughts that really are the most important part of us, more than the physical actions. Can ikar veirus shebelev. Similarly, our main sinning is also in our thoughts. Our main sinning is also in our thoughts. And even though our rabbis have taught that when a person thinks a bad thought, Hashem does not count it as a deed. Let's say you think about eating something that's forbidden, as an example. So you think about it, you daydream about whatever cheeseburger, right? You think about this cheeseburger and you imagine how you're going to eat it. So now Hashem doesn't count it as an action. You do not get punished for that. Right? If you were just thinking of doing it, but you never did it. You just thought of doing it. But you never actually did it. So you don't get punished for that. That's a rule. Right? So therefore, even though Hashem does not count actions as deeds, right? Which is to say, he's not going to be punished as having done a deed because he didn't do the deed. There is no deed. However, in terms of the thoughts, there is a certain contamination. There is a certain blemish. Because he's been indulging in a forbidden thought, so he gets, he's been thinking of something forbidden as opposed to being thinking of something permitted or thinking of a mitzvah. So therefore, there is a certain, it wasn't as bad as a deed. Much, much less. But there is a certain blemish, right? And that has to be corrected. Because the sinning in one's thoughts is of some bad attribute, shishoyish maisave, which is the root of the action. Because every action starts with a thought. First you think of doing something, and then you do it. You don't just do something. you first think about doing and then you do it. Maybe it's instantaneous. Maybe you just think about it for half a second. But first you think and then you act. So our thoughts are the center. That's the control center. Right? The top management of your body is your thoughts. Right? That's where the managing director sits in your thoughts. The Chazal Shiyodish Ika Avodas Adam, he believed. And therefore our rabbis who know that the main service of a person is in the heart, they said Shehiru Avei Kashi Avei. In a sense, thoughts of sinning are worse than the sin itself. But now it's not practically, because it never became practical, but in one sense, in one aspect, thinking about sinning can be more severe than sinning. Okay, the rest of this topic we're going to leave for the next class. But basically what we've just been saying is that all of our actions are based on thoughts, and since we also have obligations in terms of what thoughts we should be doing, right? You should be loving Hashem, you should be loving life, you should be enjoying life, you should have a sense of privilege. To be alive is a sense of privilege. All of the things that we can be thinking, which also, just by the way, make us feel good, right? Thinking the right thoughts makes us feel good. So therefore, since these are also, they're an obligation in and of itself, and they're also an obligation in terms of how they affect our actions and what our speech also. Certainly our speech is affected by our thoughts, right? You're thinking negatively of some people, suddenly you start saying negative things about him because you were thinking so, right? It just sort of spills out. Oh yeah, I didn't mean to say that. But because you were thinking of it, so that's why it just spilled out, it spilled over, right? It's like the pot just boils over, yeah? So therefore, since our actions are very much determined by our thoughts, and our thoughts in and of itself can be mitzvahs or averas, so therefore this gives special importance to thoughts, and that's why the rabbis have taught that we have to be very, very careful with what we think.